All right, we're back in Genesis chapter 15, and the verse 1. Now, I'm not going to go the first part of verse 1, but what does the second part of verse 1 tell you? What does it say?
Ram your shield.
So, I'm sorry, what?
Ram your shield.
Okay, complete the whole command, or a whole statement.
Your exceeding great reward.
Anybody else has any other translation of that phrase?
Mine says, do not be afraid, for I will protect you, and your reward will be great.
Your reward will be great. All right. Yes, Ellie? Wait, I got to get over here. Go ahead.
Fear not, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward will be very great. I am a shield to you.
All right. So now, there is something here. Now, what was the first statement he said here? Don't be... Now, why would he say that? Because what the vision that he was going to see, remember, vision is something that God shows. It's not a trance. He actually saw, and it did something to him. It horrified him. And he was in Hoshech. We'll get to that now. So when we look at this statement, the very first statement of part B, it's just not a statement. He's going to be showing him something that's enough to literally put him into fear. Not for himself, but what he saw. And as we go through this little ceremony that he did, you're going to probably have read or thought that or have heard from other commentaries that this little scenario that he goes through was well-known practice. I 100% disagree. We're only 375 years from the flood. Now, what happens when someone wants, this is my personal opinion now, when someone wants to disregard what God did by saying it was a tradition well-known, they want to make, in a sense, a mockery of what he just stopped through showing, Abram. And it's just like the word of circumcision. They said, well, it's always had circumcision. Well, we're talking 375 years from the flood. And they say, well, everybody got circumcised before. What's the big news? No. God instituted it for the first time with Abram. We'll see that as we get there. And if any other organization or buyback says, well, let's have it 100, 300,000 years before Abraham, I hope you know it's a lie. Because it's only 375 years since the flood. So we're talking like, and Shem's still alive. Shem is still alive. So what I want to do is, first thing I want to do is dispute some of the doctrinal sayings that these PhD people have. I'm sorry, when God instituted something, he instituted it and he did the institution. And it didn't affect anybody. They didn't learn it. God didn't use it from some other tradition, some other group of people. He didn't borrow it. He did. Okay, that's one thing I want to make very clear to you, because it's very important about this particular vision that was shown. And this vision that was shown, now what does vision mean?
See.
I get to see what's going on. It wasn't in a trance. He wasn't in a dream. And if you look online, and you'll find, you go and research the word vision, it never is a person that's in a trance. We know that, right? He actually, God showed him something. So verse 2 says something, though. Abram said to Yahweh, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eleazar? How many know what Eleazar means? Sorry, what?
God is help.
Yes, God is help. That's what that word means. And so it wasn't just anybody that he picked. He says, this is the one. Must be God's help. This one, the one that this I get help from God through Eleazar. Because a promise was given to Abraham earlier. We won't go back there today. We'll definitely go back there sometime in the future. We're not going back there today. And Abram said, look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is heir. And basically, if no one else, if he had no other children, this particular one would inherit everything that Abraham had. All right? And then what did Yahu say? Behold, the word of the Lord came, or the word of Yahu came, and said to him, this one will not be your heir, but one who come from your own body shall be your heir. Keep that in mind, because we will go into this particular statement a little later on in the next couple of chapters. Verse 15. Now, what did God do? He then brought him outside and said, look now toward the heaven and count the stars if you're able to number them. And he said, so shall your descendants be. Now, what was Abram's response?
He believed.
Okay. But that wasn't all that he doubted or questioned, right? Okay, I believe you. Okay, now, what else did Abram ask? And he believed God, and then he said to him, Yahweh said unto Abram, I am the Lord Yahu, who brought you out of the land of Chaldeans to give you this land and inherit. Then Abram turned around and he said something. What did he say? How shall I know that I will inherit it? Wait a minute. Didn't he need to believe God? Well, yes, he did. We'll get to these words, that statement, in a few minutes of what God said. Do not be afraid. And the latter part we will catch up with. Very fascinating thing when you listen to what God actually, when Devarim comes from Elohim, it's fine to believe it and know it's true. All right? And this is a fascinating thing about this thing, because now he turns around, and what did God say to him? Verse 9. What did he say? This is open. Tell me.
He commanded to bring forth a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, and a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon.
All right. Odd, isn't it? Now, what do you think those things represented? What were they?
Sacrifice.
We will see what they represented. It is not a sacrifice because there's no altar. If there's an altar, it would be a sacrifice. And that's a key thing to keep in mind, what's going on here. He laid them on the ground. He did not lay them on an altar.
They were female, too.
And they were female ones, except for the one ram. And there's two birds. All right, now what was he supposed to do? Cut them in half. Separate them, one from another. They're facing each other.
Except the birds.
And then the birds. Okay. Now, some translations have the word pigeon. And what's the word for the other bird?
Turtle dove.
Mm-hmm. Bad translations. Hebrew word is nest. One that nestling. The one that's still in the nest. Is the pigeon or the dove, and the one that's in the nest. It is young. It depends totally upon its mother. Very fascinating to know this. Now we have the separation. We have the female must be 3 years of age of the he-goat, the goat, and 3 years of age of the heifer. It's a heifer. And 3 years of age, or at least 3 years or under, of the age of the ram. And then there's this pigeon or turtle dove. And there's this nestling little bird that was the young of the dove. Right? So you got a picture in your mind, right? What it looks like? Right? What was Abraham's, what happened next? When he laid them all out. What took place? And he brought them and he cut them into down the middle and placed each one opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds into. Verse 11, what does it say? I'm sorry, what?
Vultures swoop down to eat the carcasses, and he chased them away.
Then what took place? Verse 12? What took place? He was horrified of the scene that just took place. What does God show him in the vision what was taking place? What did God show him? Why were the vultures, we'll get that word in, it's not really a vulture, we think of modern vultures, it is a hawk. All right, now listen further what God said. Keep in mind what he sees, Abram saw, and he was horrified, and he was in darkness. I mean, he didn't like what he saw. He saw before then, what did he see before all this took place? What did God show him first?
A vision.
What?
A vision.
Showed him the stars. Now he says, great is your reward, right? So he's telling him, by the way, your descendants will be great. They'll be massive in numbers. Look up. Your reward is your descendants. They're as the stars of the heaven. Great is your reward. It will increase. It will multiply. Here, Abram saying, okay, show me. You know, let me see. Show me something. And so God had him do these things for these animals. They're all clean animals and always females, except for the one ram, that's just the male, and the two birds. And when the hawks did, we'll talk about the hawks in a minute. What the hawks did was what? Come down to what?
Eat.
To eat the animals. Why was that important? Why was that necessary? Yes.
Because when God said to him, your kids are going to be in trouble. And when those animals are trying to eat the carcasses, and he's trying to get them away, he realizes that he's trying to save his own kids from
who are divided, who are separated from one another. The nation of Israel is going to be split right down the middle. Now, as we go on to this particular picture, we see a little bit more. Because there's something very interesting about the hawks. Now, he goes on, he explains more in this. Remember, the vision talks to him. In the book of Psalms, the 19th chapter, which we go at every new moon, and we go through our candle lighting thing, the verses before tells you, go out and look at the stars. They are talking to you in a language you don't know. Oh, that means we really have to pay attention to it, right? What does the language up there tell you? It is a vision. He's showing you something with your own eyes to see what's all up there in that heavens. And when Abraham was shown that, Abraham saw, and in a sense, the stars talked back, and he heard. And that's why he believed. Yes?
He saw that his children were going to be victims.
Right. Now, this is very important. Now, we'll get to the hawk here in just a minute, but I want you to know, What else did he say? Verse 13, he says to Abram, know certainly that your descendants will be what? Strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them for 400 years. We're not going to talk about the 400 years right now. It's a prophetic statement of a certain point in time. We're not going to go back there. Now, what happens, what was the image of the Pharaoh? What was the image of the Pharaoh? What did he have as one of his ornaments that he put on his head?
Snake.
I'm sorry, what?
Snake.
No.
Sun.
No.
The hawk.
The hawk. The hawk is the most highest power for a Pharaoh could have on his head. And he considered that the greatest of them all. Because what a hawk does, come down and it devours. Mm-hmm. You can see pictures on the internet. Type in the known live about this hawk. I don't think I got a picture here. I meant to bring one, but I didn't. But the Egyptian god of Hutter and Hotter is the hawk. And you'll see an image of what the pharaohs wore when they were in Pharaoh, one of the most highest honors they could ever have. They actually had a crown or face that was put over there, like a helmet, put over the face, and it was the face of a hawk. And when you get in Hebrew, you start reading this thing about vultures. Don't think about the American vulture down southwest in Texas. I mean, that stuff wasn't there. They had hawks back then. All right? All right. A hawk just does something. Dumps down and it attacks and rips apart and will devour. What happened to the house of Israel? They were devoured. They were split. How did they get split? Oh, we got it. I got it. How did they get split?
Well, Joseph's family goes down early.
Okay. Division there is Joseph's family goes down first. Joseph went down first. The house was now divided. It was split. Now, Joseph is the one that has the more blessed than the rest. But at the very beginning, this is what Abram saw. And that's not what he wanted to see. But God said, no, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And we're not going to talk about the 400 years because it has to do with a certain specific time. And we're going to go back there and talk. Next week, hopefully, I will cover it, but I can't do it today. All right? Actually, technically speaking, next week I'm going to talk about a different subject matter because I got two questions people ask me. And I need to cover those two questions next week if altogether possible. So there'll be a suspension of Hebrews here. I mean, Hebrews. The Hebraic language. Yes?
Actually, the division was the Joes and the Jews.
Now, where she's going? She's going farther down in Jacob's life. So when you look at this thing, know the division took place, and they were going to be devoured by, they were going to be consumed by, and what happened to them? What was one of the things that Pharaoh did? Why was Moses spared?
Because of Pharaoh's daughter.
Sorry, what?
Because of Pharaoh's daughter.
Okay. What was Pharaoh doing?
Killing
the children, especially the men, to stop. Uh-huh. And so you now have a picture of the house of Israel being damaged and split apart. Can you imagine if you possibly can? We will get there in Exodus one of these days. When we get there, you're going to find out what two women did. And you'll be amazed what they did. They laid their life on the line as much as they could not to let it happen. But it still happened. And you'll find when we reach there that what this Pharaoh did, he did it underhandedly. We'll get to there when that time comes. It's very important to know that, but not right today. So as we look at this thing in the story about Abram, and you say, okay, fear not, Abram, I am thy...
shield.
Why would he say that? It didn't look like he shielded him at all, did it? Your descendants will be what?
Slaves.
What are Yahoo going to do? Protect them. It's a promise. He wasn't just rattling off for Abram's sake. Abram's life was not in danger. But when he saw the vision, God said before he showed him what's going to happen and how he's going to bring it about, he had to tell Abram what you're going to see in simple words. What you're going to see is something that's going to make you afraid. Now we just think, it's just a statement. Abram was not afraid for his life. He was horrified of what was going to happen. How would you like to have been knowing that your descendants were going to be treated that way? Now, of course, it's not the end of the story, is it? What else took place?
Verse 14.
What does it say?
It says, I will execute judgment on a nation that they serve, but in the end, they'll go through with great will.
Uh-huh. What else took place?
And he was to be in peace with God.
He said something to Abram, though. What did he say to Abram?
He said that as for him, he would live
to a ripe old age.
And in peace.
He never saw his children, grandchildren. He lived all the way to see Jacob, but he didn't get to see Jacob's kids. He died before they came on the scene. Now, Abram knew this was going to take place. Can you imagine what he had to tell that to his son, Isaac? And then he had to tell it to his grandson, Jacob. Now, we'll get into those two men a little bit later as their scene shows up, okay, who they are and how they are involved with this whole scenario. You had a...
Well, the fact that the family all knew about this story. So Jacob would not have gone down into Egypt. He was forced to because they sold Joseph down there. They wouldn't have ever gone down there willingly.
Yeah, but he did not go down there unless he went to Yahweh first and said, Do I go? And he said yes. He didn't go down there unless he was told by God to do so. All right. So what do you think so far about the story? Now, God made a promise to him. What was he promise?
They'll come back in the fourth generation.
Mm-hmm.
His descendants would inherit that land.
You're going to inherit that? How big is the land? Yes.
Is that why Jacob's father did not want to be buried in Egypt while they were there?
Not Jacob. Yeah, both. Yes, correct. And even Joseph. And even Joseph.
Yeah.
Right.
Jacob and Joseph.
Right. Well, that's a little bit farther down the line, but that's true. They knew what the promise was. Those men, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, knew more about the thinking, how God thought, than most people can imagine. We sometimes, quote, struggle. I wonder what God wants me to do. I wonder what God thinks. Of course, it's written from the Genesis to the book of Revelation is what he thinks. But sometimes we say, well, I don't understand it. Well, what's the problem? Just read it. And could we be cynical about that? But the truth is, it's there. You have the same exact identical tools of research that I do. And every professor has. But the one tool you have that a lot of them don't have, and that is the Spirit of the Father. Because without that, you could understand nothing. It's totally blank. All right? So when we look at this little story, it's not completely futile because God goes through these splits, but that's the next chapter. But on this thing, it's very fascinating to know that you're going to have the piece of land. How big is that piece of land?
From the river of Egypt to the Euphrates.
What does Euphrates mean? You forgot?
Two rivers?
No, the word Euphrates.
Fruitfulness.
Fruitfulness, yeah. Something that's going to increase drastically. When the Israelites came out of Egypt, God told them, go as far as Euphrates River. It's yours. Now, we know they expanded quite a ways east of what's called the Jordan River, but we don't have, because we weren't there to know, did they go all the way to the Euphrates River? Well, you remember, it's not like billions of years afterwards, or thousands and thousands and thousands of years afterwards. It was a little over 400 years later. Keep those dates in mind. Keep those times in mind. Because as we keep expanding and looking at these things, I want you to keep the mere fact. Now, once again, 375 years from the flood. How many people do you think were on the face of the earth?
Thousands.
Maybe. Huh?
Tens of thousands.
Nah. Remember, I want to start out with six people who could procreate.
But they could also procreate for over 300 years.
They didn't say that. We don't have millions upon millions upon millions on the face of the earth 375 years afterwards. It does. It's impossible. Mathematically, it's impossible. I'll even get back to that later on when we talk about the number coming out of Israel. Mathematically, every woman would have to have 27 children to reach the number. Every woman would have to have 27 children to reach the number. But it's a word, ancient dead word. No one knows what it means. We won't get there today. So we're looking at a story here now that Abram saw something, and it did something to him. It horrified him. How would you like to be horrified? You know, he had his hope. One of his hope was, my descendants are going to be great, huge, large, massive. And all of a sudden, God said, well, before that happens, this is going to take place. Now, we won't go into why yet, because we're not down that line yet. So now we have here some very interesting names. Verse 19.
They're all the ice people.
I'm sorry, what?
They're all the ice people.
Kenites. We don't know what Kenite means. The real simple word. Smiths. A blacksmith. Kind of like the person that works with. What do they work with? Iron. Metals. All right. What's the next one? The Kenites. What are they called? Kenites. What are they called? They're hunters. They hunt. All right. Then we have the Hittites. You know what Hittite means? Terrorist. A terrorist. Terror. They terrorize people. So, you know, terrorists is really back there. Okay? They've always been around. All right? Then the Pizarites, which are just the villagers, souls that live in the village. And then there's the... What's those other ones? Which are...
Giants.
Always have been big, large people. All right? Now, they're going to inherit all this land they got, and the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Gerizzites, and the Jebusites. You know how big those areas are? How many of them there are in what's in the area known as the land of Canaan? Who are the Amorites? You know what that word Amorite means? The sayers.
The what?
The sayers. And he said something about the Amorites. The sins of the Amorites have not come to completion yet. You remember who had to fight the Amorites when they came out of Egypt? The Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
And... where was it?
Saudi Arabia.
Jordan.
A little farther north, more like in
Syria.
Mm-hmm. Remember, and who wanted to stay on west of Jordan? Reuben. And Gad. And then the half appointment were allowed to go there, stay in there. And they expanded eastward. And so they took in the Gulf and all that land, which God said to Abram they would inherit. It was theirs. Sometimes we think it only. They didn't inherit all that from the land of Euphrates, but they did. What they didn't do is hang on to it. They didn't hang on to it. You know, Daniel goes through the book of Judges, the book of Joshua. You find quite often how they didn't hang on to it. They just didn't fight for it. They didn't struggle to keep it. Okay, so now we know a little bit more in verse, the last part of verse 20. No, I'm someplace else. Shield. You know what shield means? He said it means what? Bogan. This is the Hebrew word for it, right? Bogan. Like Bogan, David? Bogan. Now, David claimed he had a Bogan. Who was it? It was God. It was, I'm going to shield you, David. Of course, now we have this, you know, modern day of Shield of Bogan David, the Star of David, it's called. But that's a symbol. I'm not looking at symbols. I'm looking at what the word means. Now, as we look back here, what he said to Abram, I am the shield. And what was he supposed to shield? What was he supposed to shield? He's supposed to shield all of Abram's descendants. Right? That's his promise. I am the shield. You have a Mogan. You have it. Doesn't belong to David. It belongs to the descendants of Abraham. All of them. Especially through the whole house of Israel. So when we think, now what the Apostle Paul called the shield was?
Shield of faith.
Shield of faith. Isn't that questions? What did Abraham do?
Believed.
Alright? That's what faith is all about. Do you believe me? Yes, I do. That's his protection. It's amazing how powerful. What does it protect? Now, what's Paul say? What does a shield protect you against?
Fiery darts.
Fiery darts.
The enemy.
From? The evil one. So now we have, you sons of Jacob, I know who you are. Not one of you is lost. You haven't lost your identity. I know who you are. Yes.
Well, I guess it takes faith to, first of all, acknowledge that there is an evil one, and secondly, that the shield will stop it, anything that comes from the evil
one. That's right. Yep. It does take faith. So, right? It takes faith. Now, in this shield that God said he was going to do, Abram was horrified. Wasn't he? He was scared. He was afraid. God says, don't be afraid. I am the shield. How? Know what? I've joined you. I'm going to show you. I will carry it out. Your descendants will come back. They're going to go through a hard time. They're going to be where the vultures or the hawks will come and devour them and even kill them at birth. That's what the young dove, little bird over here, still in the nestling, represents. It's even the young ones will die. You get the picture now? You understand what's going on here? And this is the reason why it troubled him. Are there any questions? Isn't that fascinating? No. Yes, Jeff.
What's with the oven and the torch?
With the what?
The oven and the torch.
Where are you at? Verse what?
17.
Okay. Take a helmet of shield. Whoops, wrong one. Wrong one. And it came to pass the sun went down, that in the darkness, behold, it appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed through these two pieces. And what does that mean? What's going on there?
That's a fire sacrifice. You've got a sacrifice that has birds.
Okay.
Well, if it's dark, you need a torch.
Sorry, what?
If it's very dark, you're going to need a torch.
That's a good point. What else do you think?
Isn't it symbolic of it takes two to make a covenant?
No.
That's why two passed?
No. No, no. This is a covenant that God made, and he made only. He didn't make an agreement with Abraham. If Abraham, if you do such and such, I will do this. He didn't say that. That's what the vision was all about. Abraham had to do nothing in relationship to his promise. Yes?
Is it just the presence of God, God himself, the burning lamp, and going, you know, signifying his commitment to the agreement?
It's going right down the middle, and that fire going right down the middle. What's that fire doing? Burning them up?
Smoke and fire.
Smoke and fire? What? Why is it going through the middle?
Smoking fire.
Right down the middle.
Separate.
I'm sorry, what?
To divide.
To divide. He's dividing the two. The hand of the Lord doing this, yes.
So in other words, it's God that divided them, not man.
Correct. That's a promise. He's going to be divided, but under really hard circumstances. Why would he do that? What is the object God wants from each and every one of us when he tells us the truth? What is the very next thing he expects and tests us out on? Do we believe him? Right? So when you are given something from God and you say, oh, I believe him, he's going to say, okay. And he waits. And he waits. What happens if you don't do it? Your heart is not where it's at. Yes?
Well, the furnace speaks of judgment and the fire speaks of purification.
Why would there need be judgment?
Whether you believe God.
And that's constantly with God. Every one of us in this room, we have to go through the furnace as in order that the other end will come out to be what?
Purified.
Purified. God will purify the whole house of Israel. Yes, judgment, but judgment is not necessarily a curse from God. Judgment is a correction. And if we respond to the correction, yeah, but you know, every one of us, you had a question?
No. The
other thing to keep in mind, now remember, how am I going to say this? The Apostle Paul, oh wait, let's put it this way. What is the first commandment of the Ten Commandments? Okay, we got it, right? Okay, we're talking about God, right? I am who I am, and you will not have
any other God.
Okay, now we look at this thing, we're saying, how does God find out whether or not you are having no other Elohim? And the Apostle Paul clarifies it even greater when he says, the covetousness, what you lust after, is idolatry. How does God judge that? What does he look at to find out whether or not you have placed something in his face?
Takes it away.
He's going to test you out. How does he test you out? Listen, the old word for worship, and we look at the modern term for worship, we have this, you know, like Roman Catholic cathedral system, or we have this temple concept of all the, you know, they do. That's not what the word came from. What does the ancient word worship means? What does it mean? It's what you respond to. You can respond to money. Doesn't mean you bow down and worship it and say all sorts of praise things in it. You will do what you do it because money becomes something that you worship. Well, I believe in God. I worship God. I have no other God before me. I believe in Elohim. He is the creator of heaven and earth. I worship God every day. But what happens when financial problems come?
What do you want? What do you chase after?
What are you going to go after? In our society today, you know what we go after? We want the government to bail us out.
Yeah.
We want the next stimulus package, economically package, you know. And God's testing this country out economically.
Right.
He's going to destroy that image. Mm-hmm. He's going to destroy that. Now, you may say, well, no, it's my work. I like my work. I like to build things. I like to create things. I like to design things. I like to be an engineer. I do the wonderful things. However, if that is so, well, I believe in God. What happens if God removes that ability away from you? What happens to you?
You're tested.
It's a testing. Everything is a test. Now, why did he test the Israelites?
To see what they would do. To see if they would choose him.
See if there was a heart in them. All right? So when you go through a trial, yes?
Well, it's what Yeshua says. I put before you life and death. I will that you would choose life.
That's what I want. That's right. And so when you go through a trial, and it comes from God, you should do what? Rejoice. He's going to get rid of that idolatry in you. And once that is gone, you can glorify God. And you know, okay, you're removing this from my world. It's going to go away. I know I don't like it, but I know at the end you will be pleased and I want to be where you are at. God will remove things. How else can he test you out? He took all of the house of Israel into total nothingness. He took away their water. Right? And when they bellowed, he gave them water. What kind of water did they take? It's bitter. Can't drink this stuff. Well, it's just a test. So when you are tested, listen very carefully. I've heard too many people say, the devil is behind this all. I'm sorry. God does not correct the devil. He corrects those that he loves. He corrects those and chastises those he loves. When something is taken away from you, and by the way, a person can worship their own children. They can worship their own children. They can worship their husband. They can worship their wife. They can worship their work. But they believe in God. Guess what? You had a...
Yeah, I was thinking about, like, in terms of worship or whatever is... How would I phrase this? God, when it comes to worship, it's what you are willing to pay attention to.
Yep. Respond
what you're
to.
Willing to respond to, and that when that thing is attacked, you respond by wanting to defend it.
Correct.
Even at God's expense.
So when we go through judgment, which this fire does, it is a testing us out. Because when you have to go through the furnace, mm-hmm. none of us like to go through furnaces, right? Yeah. Meshach, Shadrach, Abednego.
But he is with us.
Yeah, if he takes it, he takes our life, he takes our life. Yeah. That's it, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to let God do what he will do.
But if he is your shield, it doesn't necessarily mean his shield will be physical life.
No. He's talking about real life,
it's
the spirit life.
He's talking about your soul,
that's right.
Your spirit.
Well, Abraham was what? The God of the living. Yeah. It was Abraham, right? If I could ask anybody here today?
No.
So when you see this fire, you know it's going through, and it's purification, and it's going to be something of a test. Now, it is Elohim, or Yahu, however you want to pronounce it, Yahweh, however you want to use the word, who is going to do the testing. Now, the buzzards came down, or the hawks came down. What did Abraham do? With everything in his might, try to... And he really exhausted himself. He couldn't keep them completely away. Nor could it occur in Egypt when they were in bondage. We'll not talk about when they were in bondage, but they became in bondage from a hawk. All right? One thing about a hawk... It's not something you see on the ground. It soars high. And when it sees what it wants, it comes down at pretty fast power and speed and kills its prey. K. catches the prey completely off guard. All right? Oh, actually, this is pretty good. It's only 2:30. Yes?
When that fire came down, all the hawks left.
Oh, what?
When the fire came down, all the hawks left.
All the hawks left, yes. Yeah. Okay, so you got a little bit better picture of what's going on? And Abraham was in Choshech, in darkness. It was more than, in Smith, that means he was more than he could actually take. Ever been so terrified and afraid that it was hard to take? Now, Abraham wasn't the one that's put on trial here. But he did see. He saw. And God spoke to him out of what he saw. Keep that in mind. Yes?
This sounds a lot like circumcision. The picture that the passing. And also in reference to when Paul talks about the circumcision of the heart that you know Yeshua brought. It's doing a similar thing, you know, as far as...
Right. Yeah, that's a good parallel, that one. Yes, Joshua.
This was a little earlier. I was just wondering if there was any correlation between that, you know, the smoking fire pot and flaming torch, then with the pillar of fire by night and the...
No. Okay. Different on that one. We'll get there when we get there. But there's no connection there. There's a connection of total, I'm going to do this. And they're going to go through some really bad times. All the way where the little nestling one, the young one, is also going to die. Wow.
Is that the firstborn?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that the firstborn?
Yeah, like the firstborn. Basically the firstborn son, yes.